Okay, I'm going to kick off for this final workshop, which is about Google Apps. My name is Barry Cordes. I work for Computing Services, and I'm going to start with a summary of what I'm going to talk about. I hope to talk for 35 minutes. We're starting about 10 minutes late there. And then hopefully we'll have 5 minutes for questions. So Google Apps. Google Apps means Gmail, Calendar, Docs and Spreadsheets. And Google Apps for your domain is a way in which Google are enabling an organization to make these apps available to their users using the organization's own domain name in URLs. Google says it's providing Google Apps for your domain to meet the needs of different organizations, a small business, a Fortune 500 company, a group or a school. And they provide three different versions. One of these is for education establishments. OECS is using the domain gaps.oxuni.org.uk for an experiment with Google Apps. When using Google Apps, each user in the organization has a separate account where they can store their messages, their documents, their calendars, their spreadsheets. And Google provide the administrator of the domain with facilities for managing these users. If the organization uses a single sign-on system, the domain can be configured in Google so that the single sign-on system is used instead of the user having to use a different username and password for their account. For gaps.oxuni.org.uk, I've done is configure the domain in Google to use SSO and have implemented this using WebAuth. Google allows an administrator to decide which apps are available to users of the domain. So you don't have to provide all of the apps, you can provide the ones that you want to provide. Seeing the university has an established email system, we wanted our Google Apps domain to use that. So we chose to exclude Gmail from gaps.oxuni.org.uk. Our experiment will mainly be concerned with using Google Apps for calendaring to see whether it provides a useful system for use by members of a department or college. Some educational establishments have already outsourced their provision of applications to Google. As Lou's indicated this morning, his catechism, what we've done is to produce a checklist of some of the issues to investigate when considering whether to outsource an application. I may have time to consider some of these issues later. Okay, so that's the summary, and this is what I want to go to in a little bit more detail. I'll tell you a little bit more about Google Apps for your domain, tell you a bit about the apps, tell you how users can be managed, and then describe outsourcing. Google Apps for your domain. There are three editions called Standard, Premier, and Education. The Premier edition is free for 30 days, and thereafter it's $50 per user per year. The other two editions are free. The things that you get with Premier and Education you don't get with Standard is that you have the ability with Premier and Education to use a single sign-on, and you have the ability to provision users, to be able to create them behind the scenes automatically from programs, or to see whether they exist, to delete users and all that sort of thing. The Premier edition has two advantages. First of all, there's a 99.9% email guarantee uptime, whatever that means. I don't know what the other people get, 0% email uptime guarantee. And the other addition, the other change that Premier has is that it allows users to have a bit more space for messages. Normally, with the standard and the education editions, the figures are 2 gigabytes. With the Premier edition, it's 10 gigs. You see that ads alongside email are optional in the Premier and education edition. Each edition allows any number of users, and there are limits on the size of documents and number of documents and spreadsheets, and I'll mention those limits later. Google Apps for your domain provides the administrator of the domain with a control panel for performing admin tasks. I've got a session open here. Let's see if I can get to the right screen. Here we've got, you'll see that, hopefully you can see this username here, OUCSGA01, that's the one we're using for admin tasks, and this particular user has a manage this domain. This is an administrator user. If I click on that, then it goes to a screen that tells me I've timed out. This is something you don't prepare for. You know, you prepare your demonstration, and it also shows there's a backdoor means that you don't have to go through WebAuth to get in. It'll be interesting to see whether the other sessions also timed out. Okay, so this is the control panel that you get to if you're an administrator. And it tells me that there are 18 users in this domain. I can find out more details about them. It also gives me the ability to look at each of the applications and configure settings for these separately. If I go into calendar, for instance, then it enables me to choose the URL for the calendaring system. It enables me to set certain things for each of the users of the calendaring system. It also enables me to disable the calendar. I said not all applications need to be provided. For the user, well, the user has a start page. It looks a bit like the personalized Google page. Here it is on the screen, and here is a real one. This is a user called Barry. That's me. And this bit down here is the Google Apps. The administrator has control over this. This bit is locked by the administrator, whereas this bit, these bits here can be chosen. There's a default that a new user gets, but the user can actually change what appears over here. These are output from news feeds, and you can add stuff, that's real technical jargon, by clicking that button up there. How does the user get to the Google Apps? Well, if we've got a domain called mydomain.com, a user can go to their Google Start page by going to the URL start.mydomain.com. You can go to a particular app by using a different prefix, so mail.mydomain.com and calendar.mydomain.com and so on. The administrator of, so this is branding for you, you don't see Google appearing there. The administrator of the domain has to arrange to use CNAMEs in the DNS to route each of these addresses to an address in Google. Each user of the domain has a username, and if the domain is SSO enabled, that will be the SSO username. The user has an email address, which will be their username followed by app followed by the domain name. And if the domain has a Gmail enabled, then for incoming email to work, the DNS has to be configured with an MX record so that messages to mydomain.com get routed to Google. And if that is done, then messages to addresses like barry.mydomain.com will get delivered to the Gmail inbox that the user has in that domain. If the domain has Gmail disabled, then each user still has an email address because the apps such as Google Calendar will want to send messages such as inviting the user to a meeting or notifying the person that a meeting is just about to start. So if Gmail is disabled, the machine handling the mail for the domain has to be configured to route messages to some appropriate email address. I've already mentioned that gaps.oxuni.org.uk, the one that we're using, has Gmail disabled. What we've done is to configure the Oxmail machine so that messages to username at caps.oxuni.org.uk are routed to the user's preferred email address, first dot, last at unit, or whatever. Okay, so that's a brief description of Google apps for your domain. I can now go through some of the apps in turn. So this is a screenshot of Google Mail. A user has an email address which is username at domain name. It has 2 gig or 10 gig of space. Gmail has the usual facilities for searching for messages. You can have personal aliases, personal lists. Gmail has virus spam and phishing protection. And you can access your Gmail using POP, but not IMAP. And confusingly, if the domain is SSO-enabled, POP access uses a password that is different from your SSO password. And you can download a client for a BlackBerry that enables access to your Gmail. I think this will also require your use of the non-SSO password. I'm not going to give you a demonstration of Gmail because my domain doesn't have that enabled, and many of you will have already used Google Mail, I guess. Let's move on to Google Calendar. And the screenshot was shown there. Very confusing screen. You can keep your calendar private, you can share it with others in the domain, or you can share it with anyone. Calendars can be created through your organization or team where each person can view or edit. Google Calendar shares the same contacts list as Gmail, if you've got that enabled. And you can import or export calendars using the iCalendar format. You can also access your Google Calendar from a program using the Calendar API. So I'm going to give you a demonstration of Google Calendar. I've got two accounts here. One of them I'm going to log in with the Oxford username Barry. Another one I'm going to log in using the username Barry2. And we'll see how we get on. In order to log in to two different things, web authoring with two different usernames, I need to use two different browsers. So I'm going to use this one. I'm using Firefox. This may have timed out, so let's have a look and see whether that's the case. Nope, we're okay. So that's the calendar for Barry. And if we go to the other one, well, I'm currently logged in as the administrator, so I'm going to close down that session and start it up again. Cancel. Don't want that one to go. I'm using, besides Firefox, for the user Barry, I'm using another browser called SeaMonkey, which starts up pretty quickly, you must agree. And I'm going to the start page for our domain, start.gaps.oxuni.org.uk, if I get that right. Sorry about this. Where will we go now? Could be embarrassing. Let's try again. And this is because my web authoring is signed by an unrecognized certificate authority, so SeaMonkey doesn't recognize this certificate, but one can solve those problems. And here you see the traditional web auth screen. I'm logging in with an Oxford username, Barry2. I'll discuss the actual web authoring that's going on here later. And so that gets to the start page for Barry2. Here's the username appearing up here. And I'm going to go into the calendaring application. And what I want to do is just to book an appointment. So let's do that. It's going to be lunch. And I'm going to invite, this is the username Barry making this appointment. I'm going to invite the username Barry, that's Barry 2 making the appointment. I'm going to add Barry to the list of people to attend this meeting. And if you've already invited someone to a meeting, it will be in this hit list, so we can choose it from there. Okay, so let's do that. We can send a message to the person to ask them whether they want to attend this. And that will go to barry@gaps.oxuni.org.uk. Okay, so you can see the meeting has appeared in the Barry 2, the person who authored this meeting. It appears in their calendar. If I go across to the other user, this user here, and refresh the screen, then you see that the meeting appears here as well, with a question mark because I haven't actually confirmed I want to attend this. and let's just attend it. Like that.
I mean, this seems to be letting you book something retrospectively.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Or is the time zone funny?
It's allowing me to book things retrospectively, which may be a good thing or a bad thing. I see what you're saying. Okay, so if I go back here, maybe you should moan and say, hey, do you really mean to do that? But it isn't. So let's go and move the lunch to tomorrow. We can send another notification to the person. Let's not do that. And if we go back to the other person's meeting, then if we refresh the screen here, then you see that it's moved the meeting to the following day, and it's still got a question mark against it because the meeting details have changed. This is the user Barry at gaps.oxuni.org.uk, and I've got their inbox open here. So we should get the original invite to the meeting appearing in that inbox, because we asked for notification to be sent. Here you see the invitation appearing in my inbox. This is for the original meeting before it got moved. And here we can click on this and it'll go right direct to the Google Calendar. Okay, enough on calendaring. Let's talk about Google Docs. This is the ability to store at Google a document, and you can create documents from scratch, or you can create them from existing Word documents, OpenOffice, RTF, HTML. You can use our simple WYSIWYG editor to format your documents and spell check them. You can invite others to edit or view the documents. You can edit documents online with whomever you choose. You can view your documents versions and roll back to any previous version. You can publish documents to the world as web pages or post documents to your blog, and you can export the documents to your desktop as Word, OpenOffice, RTF, PDF, HTML or ZIP. Okay. And each document can be up to 500k bytes plus up to 2 megs per embedded image. Each user has a limit of 1,000 documents and 1,000 images. Okay, so we've got another demonstration here. We're going to get Barry 2 to create a document. This is Barry 2 again. I go to Docs and Spreadsheets, which is up here on the top left. Then it shows me what documents I've got. Okay, and what we want to do is create a new document. And we can start typing text in here. Demo for ITS SS conference, first line. We can start saving the document. I'm not sure when auto-saving kicks in. I haven't worked that one out yet. Need to work that one out. And we can start adding more lines like this. We can look at the revision history of this document now. And you see that there are, in fact, 3 versions of this document. There's the original with no text in it. There's the second one with demo for ITS, first line, 2 lines in it. And there's this other one, the latest version. If I click on revision 1, I can see the whole text of that document. And if I want to, I can revert to this, make this the current version of the document. Okay, there's some buttons up here. The one marked share enables me to invite others to work with me on the modification of this document. You can invite people to just be viewers, or you can invite them to write as well. And once again, as soon as I start typing, it'll look to see if I've invited this person previously. So I just need to choose that and then invite them to be a collaborator. And At this point, it will produce a message which I can send to the person. Help me with this. So that's going to Barry at caps.oxuni.org.uk, and it will result in the user Barry getting a message. So if I go to that other window, wait a minute, let's just make sure we get back to where we are. Okay, so we're still in that screen. It's listed who the collaborators are over here, and if I click on the edit back button, I can get back to editing the document. That's given time for the mail message to get round, I hope. So let's go and have a look and see whether that is the case. So in fact I've got two messages, which is it may strike you as rather a little confusing. This is the one from Barry 2 to Barry, and it tells me there is a new document for me to look at, and if I click on this link then it will open up Google Docs onto that particular document. So this is the collaborator, this is the user Barry opening up the document as well. And this is the, we'll open it up with the latest state of the document. And because the user Barry 2 also has this document currently open, then there's this reminder down here that this is the case. But we can start altering this. Another line. Remember the line's second line was thrown away because I reverted to an earlier edition. If I go across to this user, then this person can, this is Barry 2, this person can also edit the document, a new first line, and you can see that whilst I was doing that, it added the line the other user had added to this document. If I go back to the first user, then within a few seconds, this one will also get an alteration to the first line of the document. Whoa, here it, I think it's about to come. Well, it will do. There it is. Okay. So you can see that one can interact with another person in altering a document. Okay, and now I'm going to talk a little bit about spreadsheets. Here's Google's feature list for spreadsheets. You can import a spreadsheet from Excel, CSV, the OpenOffice format, and you can export in any of those formats, and you can also export as PDF or HTML. The next two bullets are a bit obvious. And the other thing you can do with spreadsheets is you can chat in real time with others who are editing your spreadsheet. The chat bit appears on the right-hand side of the screen, so you can have a conversation with anybody else who's working on the spreadsheet. You can access a spreadsheet from a program using the spreadsheet API, so you can do modifications to a spreadsheet from your favorite programming language, or a number of them. Each spreadsheet can contain up to 10,000 rows, or 256 columns, or up to 50,000 cells, or up to 20 sheets, which I find all very amusing. And each user has a limit to 200 spreadsheets, and the limit on the spreadsheets that can be opened at any one time is 20. You can import spreadsheets of approximately 1 megabyte. I've really got no time for a demonstration. It's very much like the document stuff that we've just been through. Every time a person updates a cell, just moves a tab onto the next cell, then that new content appears in any collaborator's copy of the spreadsheet. It is really, really fast. It's a lot faster than what we just saw for documents. So the updates appear on a cell-by-cell basis. One big difference, as I've mentioned, is that spreadsheets allow you to chat with other people doing work on the same spreadsheet, whereas that isn't in Docs. Though there, and really there ought to be this consistency between both Docs and spreadsheets. And although there's a lot of similarity between the two, there are some differences in the user interfaces, and the two applications should be made more consistent. Let's move on to look at how we can manage users. even if the domain has been configured to use SSO, an account has to be created for each user in the Google Apps domain. And there are three ways in which you do that. You can use a GUI interface in the control panel to create users one at a time. You can bulk update using a CSV file, or you can use a computer program written in whatever language, Java or whatever, Perl. There are other languages that enable you to query whether a user exists, to create a new user, or to delete users. I've done the latter task. I've done all of those tasks, all of those three methods of doing this. The last one I've done using Java. If an administrator wishes to switch to SSO, they need to provide people with four pieces of information. The URL of the login page, the URL of the logout page, the URL of the change password page, and because information is going to be passed from your local server where you're doing the web authoring to Google, you need to encrypt, those messages will be encrypted, so you need to provide Google with a public key to unencrypt those messages. And here's the screen in the control panel for doing this. You can see that this checkbox up here, this tick box here, enables you to enable single sign-on, and then you provide the information about the information I've just told you. This auth.gaps.oxuni.org.uk, the login page, is on a machine at Oxford. So, what happens when uses a browser to go to start.gaps.oxuni.org.uk? Well, I've already indicated you need a CNAME to route that to Google, so when the browser goes to that URL, it will get routed to a machine in Google. Google detects that this is for a domain that has been configured with SSO, and so it looks up what the login page is, and so it sends a redirect to the login URL. That's a machine that's located at the University of Oxford. This URL, this thing here, the IDP, is actually a Java servlet controlled by Tomcat, and Tomcat's been configured to ask for WebAuth authentication if a person accesses that page. So the user has to supply an Oxford username and password. The servlet then gets a go at doing some work. It generates a digitally signed response containing the Oxford username and redirects the browser to Google's assertion consumer service. The ACS verifies the response. I mean, you've encrypted this information with the private key, and the ACS verifies the response using its copy of the organization's public key, and then redirects to the URL or the start page of gaps.oxuni.org.uk. So you saw all that taking place when I logged in as the user Barry 2 just now. To help an organization integrate Google Apps for your domain with their SSO, Google provides a reference implementation of the code needed by the login page, and as I've already indicated, that's code that's written in Java, a Java servlet. I've slimmed down that code of the reference implementation to actually what we need. And for web authoring, the code uses a Java library written by an ex-member of OUCS, Matt Henriksen, that he contributed to WebAuth's parent site at Stanford University. The code that we have on the login page, I've extended that to make use of the provisioning API so that when a new user comes to use start.gaps.oxuni.org.uk, and a new user comes to do that, what the code does is to check with Google first as to whether the username exists in the domain, and if the username does not exist, then the web page informs the user that information is going to be passed to Google, that the data they provide for calendars and documents will be stored on a Google server, and that when they reach Google's new user screen, they're going to be asked to accept Google's terms and conditions. And only if they're happy to proceed do they click on the button. And it will then create an account for the user in Google before redirecting the user's browser to Google. So I don't have to go behind the scenes and create users. Users get created on the fly when the user first logs in. Okay, where are we going for time? I wanted to give you a few minutes for questions. Lou mentioned the fact that people make use of external sources, and we're providing a checklist of sort of questions people should be asking if they want to revert to using an external source for an application. And I'm not going to go through all those, but if we're going to adopt Google Apps, perhaps just for calendaring, we need satisfactory answers in each of those areas. Google provided a web page where you can find their customers for Google Apps, and under the education heading of that page, you'll find about 14 sites, the first three of which have a significant number of users. Arizona State have 65,000 students using Google Apps. Lakehead University in Ontario moved 38,000 students, faculty, staff, and alumni in a week. What? In a week? Wow. And Northwestern University has got 14,000 students, which they're moving to Google Apps this year. Okay, let's draw some conclusions. Google are providing some significantly useful applications. They're likely to add to this portfolio of applications, and they currently plan to add presentations in summer 2007. I wonder whether they'll add a content management system to Google Apps for your domain. The administrator can create web pages, so you can go to www.opportunity.org.uk, and you get web pages. There are users already there with passwords, so I think it wouldn't be too difficult to add a content management system to provide a workflow for people to add web pages to the collection of web pages for the domain. Because Google Apps are accessed through the web, then your messages, your calendars, documents, and spreadsheets are available to you anywhere in the world. And they're providing things which used to be extra as a standard. User control access to documents and calendars, multiple user access to documents and calendars, versioning of documents and reversion, APIs to access the data, fairly sophisticated user management and branding of the site. The Google Apps single sign-on system is complicated to set up, but if your organization uses SSO, then setting it up means there's one less password for your users to manage. I think outsourcing of an institution's email is fraught with problems. Probably the same could be said about documents. Maybe one role for Google Apps for your domain is to use it in addition to what you currently provide, perhaps for use on specific projects. As I've already indicated, OUCS is experimenting with using Google Apps for calendaring, and we'd be interested in a few departments or colleges joining this experiment. So if you're interested, please send a message to webmaster@oucs.ac.uk.